just met on the bank of the Ganga. And Vidura put questions, he posed questions to Maitreya. He asked him about the creation. He asked him about the different incarnations, how the Lord enters as incarnations within the creation. He asked about the living entities, what forms they take, what names they have. He asked about the planets and who rules them. And he made a special request in the last few verses that we heard, that please, Maitreya Muni, whatever you reply, please do so in relationship with Krishna. Because Vidura had no taste for anything that was disconnected from Krishna. He had tasted everything else in the material world, but did not want any more. He wanted everything to only be in connection with Krishna. So Maitreya Muni began to reply, and in text 17th of 21, he begins his reply not by immediately answering the questions of Vidura, but rather he begins his reply by glorifying the speaker of the questions, Vidura. Because Vidura was not an ordinary person either. And actually there's one purport of Srila Prabhupada that may give us some hints as to why Vidura understood that Krishna had remembered him just before leaving this world. But in any case, Sukadev Goswami, in telling this to Maharaj Prickett, he began to narrate Maitreya Muni's reply. He said, "O Vidura, all glories unto you. You have inquired for me of the greatest of all goodness, and thus you have shown your mercy both to the world and to me, because your mind is always absorbed in thoughts of the transcendent." So Maitreya understood, or he was considering, that he had been given an opportunity to speak about Krishna by Vidura. So that was good for him. It was good for the hearer, and that is the wonderful thing about Krishna Katha. It is good for everyone who asks the questions, it is good for everyone who answers the questions, and it is good for everyone who hears. Because it is about Krishna. In the fourth canto, there's this one little section, I can't remember exactly where Prabhupada mentions something about the potency of Krishna Katha and Srimad Bhagavatam by saying that in the presence of Bhagavatam, on hearing the Bhagavatam, everyone's miseries will vanish. They will be vanquished. At least during the time that they are hearing about Krishna. Because when hearing about Krishna, the connection with Krishna takes place. And that is what we are lacking. And that is ultimately what is the cause of all miseries. And therefore, to connect again with Krishna is the cure ultimately for all misery. So, he thanks Vidura. Maitreya thanks Vidura for saying that he had been merciful to him by asking the questions. "O Vidura," Maitreya continues in 19, "it is not at all wonderful that you have so accepted the Lord without deviation of thought, for you were born of the semen of Vyasadeva." So your birth as the son of Vyasadeva, one would expect such exalted qualities from such a person. So in this way, by saying that, he is glorifying him indirectly by saying, "It is not wonderful that you are so fixed on Krishna." He's actually glorifying him by saying, because you are such an exalted personality, this is what we can expect from such an exalted personality, that one's consciousness is fixed on Krishna. So by saying it is not wonderful, he's saying that yes, you're an exalted personality. I know that you are now Vidura due to the cursing of Mandavya Muni. In the first canto, he's called Mandaka Muni, I think, yes? Yeah, so maybe that's his nickname. They call him around me. Something like that. I know you are now Vidura due to the cursing of Mandavya Muni, and that formerly you were King Yamaraj, the great controller of living entities after their death. You were begotten by the son of Satyavati, Vyasadeva, and the kept wife of his brother. So he's explaining that although you are the son of Vyasadeva, and you had been traveling on pilgrimage because Duryodhana had brought up your mixed parentage, but actually you are Yamaraj. You are the most exalted person. You are practically speaking an eternal associate of Krishna. So this story of the how Vidura, Yamaraj took his birth as Vidura was described in the first canto in one of Prabhupada's purports, how he was cursed, Yamaraj was cursed because there was a young boy, the Muni, when he was young, he did something. He pierced an ant with a piece of straw. So later on, when he was older, some thieves came to his hermitage, and the police constables arrested him. They arrested the thieves, but they also arrested the Muni, and they were about to kill him. They were about to kill him with a lance, and he was innocent. So he was released ultimately, but he went to Yamaraj and he asked, why is it that I have been put in this difficult circumstance? Because any time we are in a difficult circumstance, it is not just chance. It has something to do with what we have done in this life or in previous lives. So the Muni understood this, so he asked Yamaraj, he challenged him, what did I do that I am liable to this type of anxiety and almost to being killed? And Yamaraj told him that when he was a boy, he had taken a straw and gave trouble to an ant, tiny insignificant ant with that straw, and therefore he had to suffer. And the Muni was furious. He said, I did something. I was an ignorant boy, didn't know anything, and I made some little offense like that, and yet your punishment to me was so great. You have no intelligence, he said. I curse you. You have no intelligence. You have the intelligence of a person who has no intelligence, a sudra, so you become a sudra. So the Muni's words were very powerful, and therefore Yamaraj took his birth as a sudra. But he still remained the exalted person. He still remained with the exalted consciousness of Yamaraj. So Maitreya Muni, he remembered, he knew the secret of Vidura's birth, that he was not ordinary, an ordinary person. So he glorified Vidura in this way. He said, your good self is one of the eternal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for whose sake the Lord, while going back to his abode, left instructions with me. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Lord, while returning to Vaikuntha, left instructions for Vidura with Maitreya Muni. So we can understand from this that the Lord must have considered, being such an knowing everything, he must have considered that, let me take Maitreya Muni, and we'll do many things by calling Maitreya Muni here at the time when I'm passing. And one of the things he did was change the heart of Maitreya Muni, and it seems another thing he did, he gave Maitreya Muni this knowledge which was meant for Vidura, and possibly others as well, but meant for Vidura. So Vidura could understand from this that Krishna, even when leaving this world, was considering how would Vidura get this more information. How would he get the association and the knowledge that he needs? So Vidura understood this, as written in the fourth chapter, and he was ecstatic thinking how Krishna was considering his needs, his own needs when leaving this world. So in this way, Maitreya glorified the position of Vidura. And then in text 22, he begins to answer the questions of Vidura and says, I therefore will describe to you the pastime by which the personality of Godhead extends his transcendental potency for the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic world as they occur one after another. Because everything that Krishna does ultimately is transcendental, whether he's dealing with the material world or the spiritual world. For him, it is all transcendental. Just like when the king, when he deals with his inner court, or when he deals with the prison house, it is all coming directly from the king, from the supreme power. So similarly, when Krishna deals with the material world, he deals with it in a spiritual way. And when he deals with the spiritual world, he deals with it in a spiritual way. So Krishna does everything ultimately through his spiritual energy. Because Krishna doesn't deal directly in any way with the material energy. So therefore Prabhupada says in the purport, the creation of the cosmic world is done by his yogamaya energy. But for our practical purposes, Krishna Shakti Paraprokta Chitragyakyatata Para Avidyakama Sangyanya Tritya Shakti Ichate. That the Lord's potencies, although they're innumerable, it's not that Krishna has three energies actually. He has unlimited energies, but they're divided generally into three categories. The internal energy, Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta, which is superior. The living entities, which are also superior, Tata Para. And the Maya Shakti, the Avidya Karma, the Shakti or the potency of ignorance. Again, it's like the police department. When the criminals look on the police department, they look at them as the enemy. But when the king looks at the police department, he doesn't see them as the enemy at all. He sees them as part of his own personal potency or power or extension of his own desires to keep the kingdom in order. So in that sense, it's the internal energy. So Krishna begins. So again, Vidura asks questions about the creation, about the different planetary systems, about the residents and the rulers of the planetary systems. So now Maitreya is going to begin to reply about the creation, how this world is created by Krishna. Because this is one understanding of God, that he must be the creator. He is called Asama Udha. He is the one who no one is equal to, no one is greater than. He is dependent upon no one. He doesn't have any source. He is the primal person. So if he is the primal person, everything has to come from him. And therefore, he must be the creator. So this is explaining, Maitreya is going to explain, as has already been explained earlier, by Lord Brahma, who had explained it to, Lord Brahma explained it to Narada Muni, how the creation takes place. So in a similar way, Maitreya is going to explain the process of creation to Vidura. So he says, and this verse is very similar as Prabhupada explains in the purport, Bhagavan Eka Asidam. That in the beginning of creation, there was only one. There was only the Supreme Lord. So this is very similar, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, to the first of the Chatusloki Bhagavatam verses. Aham eva sami vigre nanyat yat sarasat param. That in the beginning, there was nothing other than Krishna. And then gradually, the material world is created. So if there is no matter, if there is nothing, if the material world is yet to be created, that means there is no matter, and yet there is the Supreme Lord, is it possible that he would have a material body? No, because there is no matter. So therefore it is clear that the Supreme Lord exists before everything in the material world. Aham even says in that verse three times, I existed in the beginning when there was nothing other than me. It was just I existed. So I doesn't mean something impersonal. If I say I did this, it means I did this. Not this one, not that one, not no one. It means that one particular individual did it. So Krishna, who is Bhagavan Eka Asedam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second, Asha, was there. So the verse says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all living entities, existed prior to the creation as one without a second. There was no second person there. It is by His will only that the creation is made possible, and again everything merges in Him. This Supreme Self is symptomized by different names. So some of the characteristics of the Supreme Lord is that He has many, many names. He is known as the Creator, the Controller, the Ishwara, the Parameshwara, the Atma, the Paramatma, the Asama Udha, no one is equal to Him, no one is greater than Him. He is known as Bhagavan. Just like the king may be known as the king, he may be known as the monarch, he may be known as the emperor, he may be known as the first citizen, he may be known as the ruler. So many different names, but those different names don't mean that there is more than one person. There is only one person, the original person, originally. So in the beginning, there is only Krishna. And this is the, practically speaking, the most basic of all spiritual principles when looking at the creation. That it all ultimately comes from Krishna. So that gives us, just by understanding this one point, that gives us an indication of how powerful He is and how intelligent He is. Because the creation is so intricate that the best scientists of the world can study it, and they have been studying it through their own powers since the beginning of recorded history. But no one, practically speaking, can actually understand anything about the world. They can't understand anything perfectly. They can't understand the universe. They can't understand the stars. They can't understand space. They can't understand the sun, they can't understand the moon, they can't understand the earth, they can't understand an atom, they can't understand the table. They can use things and manipulate it. But actually, no one can understand even what matter is. So everything is so complicated, and yet, this Supreme Person is the creator of it. So how wonderfully intelligent and organized and powerful He must be. It is so hard to keep order. To keep order is so difficult. What does one need to keep order? One needs intelligence, one needs power, etc. So He creates, He keeps in order, He maintains, and ultimately He destroys. So this is the first principle that we understand, that everything rests upon Krishna. So therefore he is so powerful, we can't even understand, we can't even get an estimation of how powerful he is. So by just understanding, getting a glimpse of the power of Krishna, what can we understand about ourselves? That we are tiny and insignificant. That our power to understand anything is so tiny. And he is so great, so therefore that gives us a hint about how to approach him. One should approach him with full surrender. So this is the basic principle. Just understanding that something about the greatness of God. And before one can deeply develop in the intimacy of his relationship with Krishna, one has to know how great he is. And how, on the other hand, how insignificant we are. So though in text 24, after describing that it was only the Lord who was there in the beginning, that Bhagavan, that means Krishna, Bhagavan means Krishna. So then one naturally wants to know why he creates. Because when one does something, it implies that one doesn't have something. When one creates something, it is purposeful. We want something, and therefore we create. And when one wants something, that means that one has a want, a desire, that it isn't fulfilled. And that means a need. So the question naturally comes that if God has a need, that means that he doesn't have something, that means that's an imperfection. Because that means he lacks something. So if someone lacks something, how are they perfect? And how are they all powerful? So because this question naturally comes, the next verses explain something about that, and especially Prabhupada explains it in a purport. Why does he create? Is he feeling a lack? The Lord, 24, the undisputed proprietor of everything, was the only seer. There was no other consciousness there, no one who could see there. It was only him. The cosmic manifestation was not present at that time, and thus he felt imperfect without his plenary and separated parts. So that means he felt imperfect parts and parcels. The material energy was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifest. The internal potency is actually the spiritual world. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The Lord is the supreme seer, because only by his glance did the material energy become active for cosmic manifestation. At that time, the seer was there, but the external energy over which the glance of the Lord is cast was not present. So what is this external energy that was not present at this time? It was only Krishna. So this will be described, it's actually described by Prabhupada in his explanation of the cover of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. It's like, it is very hard to understand, but it's like a cloud. This cloud of the material energy covers one portion of the Brahma Jyoti, of the spiritual effulgence. And that portion is called Pradhan. It is Brahma Jyoti, but yet the cloud of Maya is there. It is the section of existence where the material world is going to be manifest. So is it material? How can it be material? It's the Brahma Jyoti is there. But is it spiritual? How can it be spiritual when Maya is there? So it is somewhere between material and spiritual, this pradhan. Very, very, very subtle. Very inconceivable. So he, Krishna, we'll hear about this later, as the seer, he sees it. He glances at this. And that is Krishna's only contact with anything resembling matter. He glances at the material energy, and that glance is Lord Shiva, Shambhu. And in his glance, the living entities are present. And time is present. And when that glance hits this pradhan, which means the primal element, then it turns into mahatattva. So this will be described a little later. But at this particular time, only the Lord is present. So the external energy over which the glance of the Lord is cast was not present. He felt somewhat insufficient, like a husband feeling lonely in the absence of his wife. This is a poetic simile. The Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. Forgetfulness of what? Dormant means sleeping. They were sleeping in their forgetfulness of Krishna. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. And that is its main purpose. The Lord is so kind that in the absence of such a manifestation, he feels something wanting. And thus the creation takes place. So it's out of his compassion for the living entities. Out of his kindness to the living entities who have turned their back on him, Bhogavan Chakare, that Krishna makes the material world appear. Although the creation of the internal potency was manifested, the other potency appeared to be sleeping. That means that the spiritual world is there. And the Lord wanted to awaken her to activity, just as a husband wants to awaken his wife from the sleeping state for enjoyment. It is the compassion of the Lord for the sleeping energy. That means the jivas, the living entities. We are asleep, dreaming so many things. Dreaming, basically dreaming that we're our bodies. That is the dream of the living entity. And he wants to awaken the living entity for enjoyment, like the other wives who are awake. The whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls in the real life of spiritual consciousness so that they may thus become as perfect as the ever-liberated souls in the Vaikuntha lokas. Since the Lord is Satchidananda Vigraha, he likes every part and parcel of his different potencies to take part in the blissful rasa. Because participation with the Lord in his eternal rasa lila is the highest living condition, perfect in spiritual bliss and eternal knowledge. So now we are sleeping. So the material world isn't actually a chance to enjoy. Yes, it is a chance to enjoy, but that's not why Krishna makes the material world. He makes the material world so that we give up the opportunity to enjoy and awaken to our real identity with him. Give up the consciousness of independent competitor of Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is going to, it describes how, going to describe how the material world comes about. Then in 25. The Lord is the seer, and the external energy, now as in the second verse of the Chattasloki Bhagavatam, is Vite Vidham Yat Pratyeta Na Pratyeta Chatmani. This is about the Maya Shakti. The Lord is the seer, and the external energy which is seen, in other words, he glances at the external energy, works as both the cause and the effect in the cosmic manifestation. That means that it causes things, but it's also the effect. And the scientist, the materialist, or any materialistic person, doesn't see anything beyond the material energy. It only sees the material energy as the cause. It doesn't see that it is the effect of something else. Krishna is the only thing that has no other cause. He is the only element. He is the primal element, the prime person. He alone is independent. He alone has no cause. There is nothing beyond Krishna. He doesn't rest on anything. That is the meaning of him being the absolute truth. There is nothing beyond him. But the Maya Shakti, even though it causes everything to occur within the material world, it's still an effect as well. The effect of Krishna. Because it's his energy. So, O greatly fortunate Vidura, this external energy, Maya, is known as Maya, or illusion. And through her agency only is the entire material manifestation made possible. So there's Krishna, and then there's the glance of Krishna at the material energy. Before, at one point, there was nothing other than Krishna, and then he decides to manifest out of his compassion. He decides to manifest the material world, so he glances at the material cloud of Maya. The Supreme Living Entity, in his feature as the Transcendental Purusha Incarnation, so he expands himself through many expansions as Karana Dakshay Vishnu, first as Balaram Shankarshan, Mahashankarshan Shankarshan, Karana Dakshay Vishnu, the first of the Purusha avatars, then Gaba Dakshay Vishnu, then Chira Dakshay Vishnu, the second and third of the Purusha avatars. So through them, he exacts the creation. He makes it occur. So the Supreme Lord, in his feature as the Transcendental Purusha Incarnation, who is the Lord's complete plenary expansion, impregnates the material nature of three modes, and thus, by the influence of eternal time, the living entities appear. So the Lord's glance impregnates the living entities within the material world along with time, and then this pradhan or primal ingredient changes into its nature a bit, and then it begins to get grosser, and the whole creation proceeds from subtle to gross. So it is starting when the living entities are in there with their karma. Things start to change and act. And then it is called the creation, the stage is called the Mahatattva. And there's an explanation of Mahatattva in the next verse, something about it anyway. Thereafter, influenced by the interaction of eternal time, the supreme sum total of matter, called the Mahatattva, became manifest. And in this Mahatattva, the unalloyed goodness, the Supreme Lord, sowed the seeds of material universal manifestation out of his own body. So this is Karana Dakshay Vishnu who does this. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The Mahatattva is the total consciousness because a portion of it is represented in everyone as the intellect. So the intellect is connected to this Mahatattva. The Mahatattva is directly connected with the supreme consciousness of the supreme being, but still it appears as matter. So there's an inconceivability in this, how it is material, yet it is connected with the Supreme Lord. It means that it is very, 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 very subtle. The Mahatattva, or the shadow of pure consciousness, so its connection with Krishna is like the connection between the shadow and the object. In one sense, there is no difference between the shadow and the object. But yet, there is a difference, nonetheless. But there's such a close correlation between the shadow and the object. You can almost say, because you can see, that the shadow of the hand, it has five fingers. The hand has five fingers. There's so much correlation. But yet, it is not exactly the same. So the Mahatattva, the shadow of pure consciousness, it is intelligence, which is, that means that the intelligence is the shadow of pure consciousness, is the germinating place of all creation. It is pure goodness with the slight addition of the material mode of passion, and therefore activity is generated from this point. And therefore it is said, it will be said later, that from the false ego connected with the mode of passion, intelligence comes. Because with intelligence we do that to use that to manipulate the material energy. 28. Thereafter the Mahatattva is differentiated. So the primal pradhan has no differentiation at all. And then the Mahatattva, there is some differentiation. Some things begin to be generated. Some specific things. So thereafter the Mahatattva differentiated itself into many different forms as the reservoir of all would-be living entities. The Mahatattva is chiefly in the mode of ignorance, and it generates the false ego. So from the glance, the first thing that is actually created in the process of creation, in the process of differentiation, is false ego. And then, from false ego, or a false identity, a false understanding of reality, of who we are, everything else will come by the different generations, different mixtures. So the Mahatattva, explaining about the Mahatattva, which is primarily in the mode of ignorance, because it has the element of matter there. It is the next stage from the pradhan. And because it is touched by the Maya Shakti, it is primarily ignorant, fundamentally ignorant. And the result of that first ignorance is false ego. That means a false identity. Because we are Krishna's servants. This is who we are. This is our self. We can't actually be defined in any other way accurately. We can't be defined as separate from Krishna because we are Krishna's servants. So this Mahatattva, so false ego means false identity. The Mahatattva is a plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead with full consciousness of creative principles and time for fructification. So this is the big bowl, the big pot where everything will come from. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The Mahatattva is the via medium between pure spirit and material existence. It is the junction of matter and spirit, wherefrom the false ego of the living entity is generated. All living entities are differentiated parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead. Under the pressure of false ego, the conditioned souls, although part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they claim to be the enjoyers of material nature. This is the prime function of false ego. When we look at matter, we see the world of matter through the false ego, not through our own consciousness, not through the actual consciousness, but the consciousness of the soul is reflected through false ego. And when it sees matter, when the soul sees matter, it looks at it as if it was meant for his enjoyment, and he wants to exploit it. He wants to possess it and exploit it. This is the specific effect of false ego. So one can tell how much false ego one has. It's much easier to tell when one looks at others. Because how much false ego they have, we tend to do that. We tend to see everyone else's false ego, but it's hard, very hard to see oneself. One can see how much one has the tendency to exploit. That's false ego. And real ego, the real identity of the soul, is how much tendency one has to serve Krishna and everyone else. Under the pressure of false ego, the conditioned souls, although parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, claim to be the enjoyers of material nature. This false ego is the binding force of material existence. The Lord again and again gives a chance to the bewildered conditioned souls to get free from this false ego. And that is why the material creation takes place at intervals. He gives the conditioned souls all facility for rectifying the activities of the false ego. But he does not interfere with their small independence as parts and parcels of Krishna. So moving on in the creation. Mahatattva, so we're up to the point where Krishna was existing alone, then the cloud Pradhana is there, then he glances at it, with the living entities are injected in the Mahatattva, it starts to differentiate, it turns into Mahatattva, it starts to differentiate, and the first thing that's created is false ego, ignorance, false ego, like that. Mahatattva, or the great causal truth, transforms into false ego, which is manifested in three phases, cause, effect, and the doer. All such activities are on the mental plane. When one has false ego, one thinks that I am the cause. One thinks that I am the effect of matter. I am the cause of matter moving, or something happening in matter. I am the effect of matter moving, and karta. So this is karya, karana, karta. And karta or kartatma means that I am the doer. So this is the immediate symptoms of false ego. I'm the doer, I'm causing it to happen, and things are being caused to me on the material level. But none of this actually exists. This is just the bewilderment, the dance of Maya that is making us think like this. And Maya's prime effect of false ego. All such activities are on the mental plane and are based on the material elements, gross senses, and mental speculation. The false ego is represented in three different modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So this is from false ego, it's differentiated further into three different parts: goodness, passion, and ignorance. In each part, people are thinking karya, karana, kartatma. Prabhupada explains in the purport. All these persons, means those who are in goodness, passion, and ignorance, are given a chance to play with false egoistic ideas. That I am the doer. Oh, this has happened to me. I am the great cause. By my power I have brought this wealth. I have done this to this country. But they're just playing with false egoistic ideas. It's actually not actually what's happening at all. But at the same time, the Lord is kind enough to give them a chance to take help from scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, so that they may understand the science of Krishna and thus make their lives successful. It's like, did you ever see little children playing in a sandbox? You know, they're taking something and they're talking to themselves and moving this around and going like this and going like this. And if you didn't say, okay, children are allowed to do that, it would appear that they're completely mad. They're mad because they're living in a completely imaginary world. And that's just what's going on. We're playing in that way. We're living, we're talking to ourselves all day long, living in an imaginary world that has nothing to do with what's going on. And the proof of that is you talk to any two people. You can watch the same thing happen. And you ask any two people, what to speak of any 10 people, what happened. And you'll get 10 different ideas of what happened. No two people will agree about everything. Practically speaking, in Kali Yuga, no two people will agree about anything. So, like the little children talking to themselves, just imagining, we're living in our own little imaginary worlds by the mercy of Maya and our false ego. So Krishna so kindly gives us the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam so that we may understand the science of Krishna and make our lives successful. The entire material creation, therefore, is meant for the falsely egoistic living entities hovering on the mental plane under different illusions in the modes of material nature. So false ego manifests in three different phases: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So now what's going to happen in the following verses, we'll read up to 36, and I'll have to read them quite quickly. It describes how the creation continues in these three, with false ego in the different modes. The false ego, first in the mode of goodness. So all things are produced from false ego in these different modes. So from false ego in the mode of goodness, the demigods come and the mind come. Then, from false ego in the mode of passion, then the intelligence is produced and the philosophical speculative knowledge, fruit of activities in the active senses, the workings, the senses are produced, working and knowledge acquiring senses. And the purport Prabhupada explains that one should give up the tendency of false ego and the mode of passion, which is to speculate, use one's intelligence to understand. And one should, Prabhupada explains, know that the absolute truth is never realized by philosophical speculations of the imperfect, egoistic person. The absolute truth, or the supreme personality of Godhead, is realized by... authority, who is a representative of the 12 great authorities mentioned in the Bhagavatam. By such an attempt only, one can conquer the illusory energy of the Lord, although for others, she is insurpassable, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7.14. Then from false ego and the mode of ignorance, then the creation gets more gross. It starts with sound, a sense object, and that proceeds to one of the elements of sky, and then the sense of sight is created. So one by one, from sound, touch, air, and then form, fire, taste, water, and then going from subtle to gross, then fragrance to earth, one by one, all the different elements, the sense objects and the senses are created. And they are created by combination of false ego and the mode of ignorance. And then in text 33 to 34, 35, and 36, Maitreya Muni describes how one by one this occurs, how each of the different elements is present, the qualities of each of the gross, the grossest of elements, earth, contains all the qualities of the most subtle elements, while the subtlest element of ether contains only sound, one element. Okay, and then in text 36, I'll just read that and read the end of the purport and then we'll end. So coming down to earth, water and then earth. Thereafter, the water produced from electricity or fire was glanced over by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and mixed with eternal time and the external energy. Thus it was transformed into the earth, which is qualified primarily by smell, the fragrance of the earth. Such an interesting concept, how the earth contains sound. It has the quality of being able to transmit sound. It has the quality of taste, form. What was the one I missed up there? Smell, that's the last one, huh? Touch. So it has all the qualities, and ultimately it has the quality that none of the other elements have, of fragrance. And when one thinks that all fragrance comes from the earth, it's such a nice concept, because it's when there's so many different flowers, and each of the different flowers, they have their own fragrance. But where does the flower come from? It comes from a seed, and what do you do with the seed? You just add water and put it in the earth. So the water has no fragrance, and the seed has no fragrance, but by Krishna's arrangement, when the soul is in the seed and the body of the seed begins to grow or germinate, then that particular flower has the ability to extract a unique fragrance from the earth. So therefore, the rose will have one fragrance, and the different varieties of roses, they'll all have their different fragrances. And the gardenia will have its fragrance, and the marigold will have its fragrance, and each one of them, but they're all, the reservoir of all the fragrances is the earth, which has the specific quality or sense object of fragrance. So all these are created one by one. All the elements, all the senses, all the sense objects are created one by one. But it is not automatic, as this verse explains. Because at each step, everything requires the glance of the Lord. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. Although there are different mixtures of different materials, such mixtures do not take place automatically, just as a mixture of colors does not take place automatically without the touch of the living painter. So it is not like the creation is some deistical, mechanistical machine that is put together at the beginning of time and then left to run on its own automatically. No. At every step, the glance of Krishna is required. The automatic system is factually activated by the glancing touch of the Lord. Living consciousness is the final word in all physical changes. This fact is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita 9:10 as follows: Maya dakshena prakriti siyate sacharacharan hetunanena kanteya jagat vipirivartate. So Maya adi aksha. Under my supervision, this is all going on. The conclusion is that the physical elements may work very wonderfully to the layman's eyes, but their workings actually take place under the supervision of the Lord, Maya Dakshena Prakriti. Those who can mark only the changes of the physical elements and cannot perceive the hidden hands of the Lord behind them are certainly less intelligent persons, although they may be advertised as great material scientists. So that was one of Prabhupada's great missions, was to criticize the material scientists. One time he said that the more that you criticize them, the more that you kick on their faces, the more advancement you will make. Because we're also polluted with the contemporary scientific idea that things are just happening by the interaction of the material energy. Seeing the material energy as cause and not as the effect, and it is the effect of Krishna. So therefore, it is important to root this out from our consciousness. Because the whole training in the educational systems in contemporary schools is completely atheistic. Completely. Consciously atheistic. From the first days in school, in the first grade, second grade, third grade, up to the highest education in the universities, it is practically speaking an atheistical conspiracy to bring the people to atheism. But no one is happy with atheism, despite all that. Okay, we'll stop here. So we... Here's our challenge. They say this is so hard to believe. But we say that there is a black hole that's the source of everything, except if that's the navel of Krishna. We heard that before. But we say that that there's a chunk or a black hole that's the source of everything. That is hard to believe. If there's a hole, what does that mean? That means there is a like a tunnel or something like that. So where does it go? It stops and there's nothing on the other side? Well, that's very hard to believe. There's a hole? A black hole? What does that mean? And people just say it without thinking of what it means. What do they mean when they say a black hole? It's just to bewilder people who would rather watch movies and, you know, just and read comic books all day long and have a simple atheistic conception. But there's no meaning to the concept, or it's a big chunk, or the Big Bang. The Big Bang. So, it just happened? Has there anyone ever seen a Big Bang, just like we heard? There was a Big Bang coming from Pujairam, and he said, who did that? And he said, I didn't do it, you know, it just happened. So that's what people will generally say. But we know that it doesn't happen just like that. Something happened that made it happen. There was a cause to that effect. So when you trace back all the causes, one comes to Krishna. And Krishna has no cause. Sarva karana karana.
What's the status of pradhana?
Anyway, we'll have two more chances in this canto. It's all Kapila Dev explains it for the third time. It's not that we can just understand it so easily, because it is so subtle. It is somewhere between material and spiritual, like that.
But it says it's just like a cloud hanging there.
That's what it doesn't say that here. It says it there. In the back of the Prabhupada explains it like that. It's like a cloud over the material and over the spiritual energy. It's Maya's combination with the spiritual energy. Maya is the cloud. So it is a cloud over the spiritual energy.
It's already hanging somewhere, and then the glass goes there and it turns
yes. different. Then it turns to Mahatattva.
But where from it has originated that thing, see?
Maya? Where does Maya come from?
No, that Pradhana.
No, the Maya, the Pradhana, it seemed. This is, I have to say that this is Bhirjan's speculation, just putting together the pieces. It's like the cloud over the Brahma Jyoti, that's what the Pradhana is. And the cloud is Maya, and the Brahma Jyoti is spiritual. Something like that.
But what's the origin of Maya then?
Krishna. It's one of his Shaktis.
That means if it is there, it is
sometimes manifest and sometimes not manifest. It's Maya Shakti Paraprokta. No, Krishna Shakti, Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta. It's of ignorance. Maya is ignorance. Maya, ignorance is a dependent quality. That's like darkness. So, if you want to really understand this, really, really understand it, really, really understand it, you'll have to go to the spiritual world. So that's not so bad, is it? Because you can't understand it fully from within the material world.
Because there are big discussions about this.
Not with me.
The realities are three, you know, not one. There is soul and super soul and prakriti. They are eternally there, all this.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, but is there one reality which is Krishna?
No, those three Vishnu Shakti. So these are the three Shaktis, but they're all coming from Krishna. They're all part of Krishna, like the sun and the sunlight. Which is the ultimate reality is the sun. Even though as soon as there's sunlight, as soon as there's sun, there is automatically sunlight. But still you have to say that the sunlight comes from the sun. As soon as there is sun, there's sunlight. The instant. But still you have to say that the sun is the source.
Yeah. But the sun is sunlight. Without sunlight there is no sun. Or at least it's not the same.
Well, same thing. Krishna means Krishna and his energies. As soon as you have sun, there must be sunlight. As soon as you have Krishna, there's Krishna's energies. He doesn't exist without energies. That's the difference between the Mayavadis and the devotees. The devotees, to talk about the absolute truth, they mean Krishna and his energies. So you can't, just like you can't define the living entity without defining Krishna, without saying Krishna's name. We exist in relationship to Krishna. So similarly, part of the absolute truth is the different energies, including the living entity. They are not separate from Krishna. This is the absolute truth and includes everything. Is that sufficiently confusing for you?
It's not a matter of intellectual understanding. In fact,
that's
inconceivable.
Yes.
We keep on trying again and again and again to understand.
Therefore, Mahaprabhu's philosophy is so wonderful because it goes back and because there is a duality and then there is oneness. And both exist simultaneously. And that is inconceivable.
So, if I think of the spiritual world, and I think of Krishna Loka, and in Krishna Loka is Krishna, Ashram Sundara playing the flute, and that is the most absolute form or absolute thing, or you can say thing, that can possibly exist, and it does exist.
It's the highest understanding of the absolute truth.
Right.
Krishna with the living entities and the spiritual world.
So then you've got the Vaikuntha planets, which are further away from that. And these are actually infinite, is that right?
Yeah.
So in each Vaikuntha planet there is an expansion of Krishna.
Who's also infinite.
And each of these Vaikuntha planets is slightly different from the other.
Yeah.
Infinitely, like a fractal.
Like a?
Like a fractal.
I don't know what a fractal
it's
is.
It's a computer image that's always, it's like it keeps... Okay,
anyway, I won't.
So they're all slightly different.
Yes.
So they're all, it's like an infinite display of...
infinite opulence.
Yeah, yeah. So then, in the same way, because everything is infinitely there, so too must the material energy, because it shows things in a mundane form. Is that right?
What? I didn't catch the last part. The question part.
The material energy.
Yes.
Being also a reality, it must exist.
Yes.
In that way, in the same way that each Vaikuntha planet is slightly different from the next, even though
but
they are
all
that.
But it exists in a different way. Than the spiritual. It's a different tetra. It's a different. It's in its a different realm, so to speak, than the material. So it has different qualities. But ultimately, because it's coming from Krishna, it's real.
So it's just like.
So it's eternal.
When Krishna has
but it's always
qualities.
Changing.
Krishna means all qualities. It also means mundane qualities, even though he has no mundane qualities.
Well, in the material world, his experience. The material his exhibition of material qualities are here, separated from him.
Yeah.
But yet it's not different from him. Because it's all completely resting upon him.
So ignorance is like a...
It's the backside.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the turning away from the light.
It's very hard to find words. Which one is going to...
Not if you just sort of read what is written, it's sort of easy, but it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to... Ignorance is ignorance. soon as one faces the sun, one's view of the material world is completely different than when one has his back to the sun and one is seeing the shadow. So when one sees it as Krishna's energy meant for Krishna's service, then that's not, it's no longer ignorance, it's just one of Krishna's energies. It's a different aspect of Krishna's energies. And then so Prabhupada actually says this in one Bhagavad Gita purport, he says that the material world, that the Brahma Jyoti covered by forgetfulness of Krishna is material. That's what the material
so
world is.
So the reason that it's non-different to Krishna is because Krishna is never forgetful.
No, the reason why it's non-different from Krishna is because it's Krishna's energy. And certainly he's not forgetful of it. But it's his energy, that's why it's non-different from them. Here, take one of these. Smell it 3 times now and then 3 times in the morning and call me if you still have a headache. Monkey, you too, you got one too. You need another one. Hare Krishna. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.